So tonight we begin this new unit and an exploration into the Satipatthana Sutta. It's an especially important teaching. In English, it means the four foundations of mindfulness. A strong mindfulness practice helps us to see things more clearly. See things as they really are. This wise understanding or wise view, you might remember as the a step in the Eightfold Path, the first step. The sati in Satipatthana Sutta means mindfulness. And patana means foundation in English, or base or support, like the foundation of a building. And mindfulness too is an important step along the Eightfold Path. It is the step that supports all the other steps. Mindfulness is present moment awareness, and Bhikkhu Bodhi said it like this. In the practice of mindfulness, the mind is trained to remain in the present, open, quiet, and alert, contemplating the present event. All judgments and interpretations have to be suspended, or if they occur, just registered and dropped. The task is simply to note whatever comes up just as it's occurring, riding the changes of events in the way a surfer rides the waves on the sea. The whole process is a way of coming back into the present, of standing in the here and now without slipping away, without getting swept away by the tides of distracting thoughts. Because that all leads to suffering. Mindfulness is our suffering antidote. And our practice asks us to be mindful as much as we can. This takes a lot of practice because it goes against the stream of our modern American culture. This culture that supports multitasking and always charging forward, being real busy. The Buddha said that this teaching was the direct path to enlightenment, not the only path, but the direct path. So that should make us sit up and take notice. In fact, he said that if anyone practices his mindfulness instructions without leaving anything out for 7 days, they can attain a permanent liberation from suffering. Can you imagine how clear your mind would be if you could be mindful for 24 hours? Every day we practice mindfulness, we come closer to liberation. The progression of these foundations is from most obvious, like the breath and the body, the most obvious, down to deeper and more subtle foundations. We go from the breath and the body to feeling tones, or Vedana in the Pali language, and then to thoughts and emotions, and then the Dhammas, which are the teachings that are supported by mindfulness. This sutta, this teaching, emphasizes four essential aspects of practice in a refrain that is used again and again. And that's how these suttas are, a lot of repetition, because as you'll remember, Pali was not a written language, it was just spoken. These four essential aspects are contemplating our experience internally and externally, contemplating the impermanent nature of all things, establishing enough mindfulness to recognize simply what is unfolding moment to moment without mental commentary, and abiding without clinging to anything that enters our realm. These are all familiar to us. They've been supported by the Four Noble Truths and the other teachings that we've had so far in this this whole series. These four are things that we can practice while on the cushion, but not just here. The whole point of our practice is to keep what we're learning in mind or remembering as we go about our daily lives. So guiding you through the formal practices that set up a foundation of mindfulness through the body that you can then take with you out into your daily activities. So, how can mindfulness of breath and the body help us reach these four important aspects of teaching? Well, we begin to develop mindfulness by focusing on one object that occurs in the present moment. The breath is that most traditional object. Breath is here now and always available to us. And it's constantly changing. But it's not for everybody. To some, awareness of breath can trigger discomfort due to respiratory illness or for some other reason. In cases like this, you're invited to choose other body sensations as the anchor of mindfulness. Just like breath, the body is here and now and available to us and in a constant state of flux. The breath and body are antidotes to distraction and a discursive mind and can lead to deep concentration and insight. Awareness of sounds can also be used for all the same reasons. For the sake of this talk, I will be using the breath, but please insert your object of focus. At first, it is not unusual for this practice of quieting the mind by following the breath to seem impossible. We have let our mind go wherever it wanted to for so long. It's a habit. It's conditioning. It requires a lot of effort and a lot of undoing. Not just the settling down and taking your seat, but then the strength and focus required to maintain mindfulness as we step up off the cushion and walk out into our lives. And as we become more and more comfortable with mindfulness of breath practice, the body softens and the mind rests on that endless ebb and flow of breathing more easily, and it gets carried away less and less frequently and for shorter periods of time when we notice it and then return to the soothing qualities of breath. At this point, the breath can become somewhat imperceptible. And when this happens, we don't want to energize the breath in order to notice it more strongly. Instead, we want to let the breath draw the mind down to its own level of subtlety, of rest, of ease of being. In this way, the breath teaches the mind the simple elegance of presence. It is kind of surprising that we are bored by the breath or overlook the breath in favor of the mind so often. The breath is our life force. It's what the Buddha's own basis for awakening was. Teacher Gil Fronsdahl says that if the breath was good enough for the Buddha, it's good enough for me. And the Buddha said this, And this is in the language of the Pali, I mean, of the suttas. It sounds like a teaching, and I kind of like it. He said, if anyone, bhikkhus, monks, speaking rightly, could say of anything, it is a noble dwelling, a divine dwelling, the Tathagata's or the Buddha's dwelling. It is of concentration by mindfulness of breathing that one could rightly say this. Speaking rightly, if anyone could say of anything, it is a noble dwelling, a divine dwelling, the Tathagata's dwelling. It is of concentration by mindfulness of breathing that one could rightly say this. He believed in awareness of breath practice. So cultivating the experience of breath internally and externally, sensing the breath as it moves through the body internally, is in a sense how we turn our attention from the busy world outside and the mind, the busy world of the mind, to the sanctuary inside. And as the breath and the mind join together in the present moment, there is a shift to the awareness of whole body breathing, noticing the movement of the whole body uprising on the inhale and letting down on the exhale. This could be considered an external experience of breath. The breath is ever changing, teaching us of the impermanent nature of all things. And while we're riding the inhale and exhale, we are in the present moment and not clinging to anything. Awareness of breath or other body sensations or sound covers all the four aspects important to practice. So shifting from the breath to the different positions of the body or postures, also considered a foundation for mindfulness. We're taught that our formal practice can take the form of sitting, standing, lying, or walking. We take a noble posture, a dignified posture, one in which we can feel both grounded and uplifted all at the same time, at ease and energized. Rooted into our base of support, be it a mat or the ground, a cushion or the bed. And a sense of the spine lifting or energy lifting up toward the sky. And there is an emphasis on softening the body. This comes with practice. The gradual letting go of contraction and tension that we can hold so carefully without even knowing it because we think it's protecting us. But the softening without collapsing allows a receptivity in the body that allows understanding and insight. When my body is holding anywhere, I notice I am lost in thought about what is happening and not really present. Almost always we shift postures due to some form of dissatisfactoriness, a pain or an itch, some kind of discomfort. I read somewhere that constantly adjusting our position leads to a fussy mind. A mind that is not easily satisfied or content. This is not to say that we cannot adjust our position for greater comfort, but it is also part of our practice just to notice the discomfort and watch it ebb and flow and make a mindful decision about the necessity to move. I love that walking is included here. Not only is it a powerful formal practice that has to offer perspective and insight, but also because it's a wonderful metaphor for bringing our practice out into our daily lives. We can observe the postures the body takes throughout the day in order to practice mindfulness. present moment awareness. So in a sense, our practice teaches us a refinement of the mind and body. The body can help the mind become more easeful, and the mind can help the body soften. I have begun to spontaneously bring yoga postures out into my daily life. I never really gave much thought about the way I move throughout the world. But a consistency of practice has led to a continuity I bring out into my activities. I am much more aware of twisting in the car in order to see all around before I back out. And in the garden, while pouring water from the hose into my watering can, I now wait in awkward chair pose. I used to hate that pose, but now it feels grounding as I balance the weight between the 2 feet and feel the pressure on the ground. My back straightening, not arching, my head lifted, and my shoulder blades sliding down my backside. Moving more gracefully and attentively matters, and I don't get so sore. If I'm mindful of my posture while gardening, my mind is not distracted with drama or other stories that stress me out. In this way, practicing body postures both internally in our formal practice and externally, noticing how we carry ourselves out and about in the world. The Buddha said to surround ourselves with good people and to model good, clean behavior for others. He said that ethical behavior is contagious. Our changing postures demonstrate impermanence, transition, and change. And as much as we can, being mindful and in the present moment by sensing into this body. And so then not clinging to anything whatsoever. This practice of mindfulness of the body can help us familiarize ourselves with some other important Buddhist themes. The idea of not self, for instance, is difficult enough to grasp, but perhaps becomes a little more apparent as we age and experience the changing nature of the different stages of the human body and how we resist them. There's a well-known but not often offered practice called the 32 parts of the body that can help us develop an understanding of not self. Insight Santa Cruz is one place that offers this teaching. And in fact, at the beginning of October, Bob Stahl and Kara Haney are offering 32 parts of the body. It carries over for about 36 weeks. And you can check the website for that offering. This is a favorite practice of Bob's. Chanting about head hair and body hair, urine and feces, blood and pus, liver and spleen. The parts of all of our bodies. This helps us to arrive at a disenchantment with the body, because being enamored with our bodies distracts us from the way things really are. Understanding the body's impermanent nature, that there is no fixed self, seeing clearly that this body is not mine, it is unstable and unreliable, constantly changing, so not worth clinging to. Just working with not self helps us practice and see clearly impermanence and the benefits of not clinging. The Buddha also left instructions on contemplating the decomposition of the human body post-mortem. Most of us do not have easy access to witness a bloated, dead body turn into a skeleton held together by sinews and then crumbling to dust. But perhaps we can visualize these various stages of decay, remembering that our bodies are of the same nature. Decomposition is just nature at work. This is what is true for all living beings. The more we can open to this truth, the less attached we become to the idea of these bodies staying unchanged, and less attached we can become, and the less we will suffer when they do change. When we understand impermanence as a direct experience, we break the spell of enchantment, waking to a greater reality. And this is the happy ending of so many great fairy tales, breaking that spell of enchantment. We have evolved from the natural world. We are a part of nature. We come from nature. I kind of lost touch with this basic principle, as maybe many people do. We get lost up in our heads and begin to think that we're above nature, higher than nature, better than nature, smarter than nature. Like that we can control nature somehow. But it is precisely this thinking that upsets the delicate balance in nature. Some of our intelligent inventions intoxicate the environment, wreak havoc with the air we breathe and the weather patterns. We are made up of the same four elements the earth is made up of: air, water, fire, and earth. All beings take air in and out, breathe to sustain life. We are all made of 60% water, and water acts as a cohesive mechanism in our bodies and throughout the earth. We have solidity in our bodies too, just like the earth, in the bones of our body. And the fire element is the temperature changes we see as we digest food or warm up in the sun or slow down and cool off in the ocean or from the wind. We share these four elements with nature. We all do. It is also why we can return to nature for the healing qualities it offers. A sense of awe, of ease, of a bigger picture. Impermanence, mindfulness, non-clinging. Stand on a high mountaintop and get back in touch with your true nature. A flow with the arising and passing of all phenomena, because you are part of it. So this first foundation of mindfulness of the breath and body, meditation on not self, 32 parts of the body, a corpse in decay, and the four elements are all powerful practices that train us to contemplate experience both internally and externally, both in our formal practice and modeling our mindfulness out in our daily lives. Familiarizing ourselves with impermanence and establishing mindfulness on and off the cushion. Also recognizing the futility in clinging to anything that enters our realm. When we can live this way, take these essential aspects of our practice up off the cushion and out into our daily lives, we then practice what liberation is all about. To abandon ill will and hatred, and to abide in a mind compassionate for the welfare of all beings. When we are not preoccupied with the self, when we are not too busy taking things personally, we get more in touch with the non-discriminate nature of our world, how we are all one and in this life together. It makes no sense to wish harm on any other person, on any other being. It makes no sense any more than it makes sense to cling to something unreliable, which of course is everything. We don't just undertake this practice for ourselves. Once we begin to see the merits of our practice, once we begin to understand that it is not all about me, it isn't personal, that we are all in the same boat together, once we cultivate an ease of being through the body, an understanding of impermanence, mindfulness, and non-clinging, once we develop a hint, an inkling, or even a moment of liberation, we naturally want this same experience, not just for ourselves, but for all beings. May all beings be at ease. So let's just take a minute to let those words sink in.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.